Here, just a free ride to ring in the new year and a safe way to get back home. Learn more at trimet.org/newyears.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
Coming up next, it's Book Wave, where National Award-winning novelist Ha Jin discusses his latest book, The Banished Immortal.
Welcome to Book Waves. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Ha Jin, whose latest book is The Banished Immortal, A Life of Li Bai. Li Bai, or Li Po, is a Chinese poet from the 8th century in China, the Tang Dynasty. Ha Jin has something like 17 books. There are 8 novels, including Waiting, A Free Life, War Trash. There are 4 books of poetry. There's an essay collection. There's a whole lot of different works, and you're a professor of English now.
At Boston University, yes.
This particular book, The Banished Immortal, what prompted you to look at the life of this poet and write this particular book?
My wife has been very ill in recent years, so I couldn't inhabit a novel. Writing a novel, you have to live with the characters for many years, but I was the primary caregiver in my family, in my small family, so I couldn't do that. For this book, for this kind, it was feasible, because I don't have to think too much about the structure, the characters. Everything is there, the materials are there. Basically, it was more like academic book. I had to do research, but the frame is already there for me. I just figure out the beginning, the ending, and follow the poems. Intuitively, I sense that every masterpiece by him would reflect a momentary of crisis in his life.
Had you thought maybe that this could be a novel?
I didn't even plan to write a book like this. Again, it was kind of an accident. There is a small press called Shambhala, and one of the editors, Dave O'Neill, about 3 years ago, he approached me and asked me to write a mini biography, 12,000 words. They are publishing series of small biographies. So he wanted me to write one of the biographies of a Chinese figure. So I gave him a list. Li Bai happened to be on the list, and he picked Li Bai. He said, I really want a book on him. Then I began to do research. I realized in English I couldn't find a full-length biography of this poet. So that gave me second thoughts, because I began to wonder, instead of a short biography, perhaps I can write a full-length biography. Just by chance, I stumbled upon such an idea.
As you were working on it, I noticed that there seemed to be points in the book where I could see you thinking, you know, if I could make this a novel, I could really flesh it out. Did that cross your mind at all?
Sure, yes, because as a novel, a lot of things you can imagine, especially the psychological parts, the thoughts and feelings. But if you write a piece of nonfiction, you can't do that. Even dialogue, you can't do much. Everything you have, one way or another, supported by sources. You also try to indicate where you get the information. So there is a different discipline, different rules in writing nonfiction. So it's very different.
Why the distinction between these different names? Li Po or Li Bai. Is that just different translations?
Different translations, also the pronunciations. There are so many dialects. The southern people, usually they call him Li Po. In some regions, maybe the major central China, the people used to call him Li Po. Li Bai, in a way, also his personal name is Tai Bai. That in ancient Chinese, that means Venus. Because when his mother was giving birth to him, she dreamed of, she saw Venus. And so they gave the name Li Tai Bai, Venus, to him. So people tend to use that word, the final word, Bai, as his personal name. So over the centuries, gradually people, most Chinese would mention him as Li Bai.
When you began the research, how familiar had you been about his life? Because he spends his entire life traveling.
Basically, yes, on the road, yes. There were so many anecdotes and legends about him. I knew his poetry, but I don't have the whole picture of him as a man, as a human being. There had been quite a few Chinese biographies, but there are different kinds. Some was very fictionalized. For instance, Mother Half basically consists of a dialogue, like a novel. And then there are different kinds, another kind of biographies centered around topics. There's an enormous amount of information, scholarship on every topic. In this case, I really want to tell a narrative, a piece of narrative, a unified story, somehow complete about this man.
So there were stories that you knew were probably, you kind of talk about a little bit in the afterwards, stories that you sort of knew might be true, might not be true, and some you knew were false as you did the research.
Yes, that's another kind of a discovery. As I started to write, I realized, in fact, most of the scholarship, in fact, came from his poetry. You know, he mentioned this, and then the scholars over the centuries, they expanded, they stretched it. So it became bigger and bigger, and became a story. So for me, sometimes it's just, for me, it would be better just return to the poetry. To the origin. That also gave me a lot of confidence because I knew the sources of that scholarship.
So you could give the poetry and then say, well, some people say this is and some people say this is not.
Yes. Right. And also I don't have to believe, you know, everything the scholars said.
Hajin, underneath it all, reading about Li Bai, I realized, okay, number one, the guy's a drunk.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And no matter how you try to sugarcoat it, he alienates most of the people around him.
Yes.
And particularly when he was drunk, he was not necessarily a nice guy.
No. Very arrogant. Never hesitated to insult others. And to some extent, we can say he was also a snob. But he was such a huge talent, as if he couldn't find his niche in this world. So eventually it is his art, his poetry that survived everything.
Let's talk a little bit about the era that he lived in, which is the Tang Dynasty. Up until the last couple of years of his life, that was a very, very peaceful time.
Relatively speaking, yes. It's the most prosperous High Tang. We call it High Tang Dynasty.
Was he kind of a rock star, would you say?
Yes, but on the other hand, in the Tang Dynasty, poetry is also kind of official culture. It's not said as official culture, but there are courtiers appointed in charge of poetry. And also there were some people who became high-ranking officials because of the quality of their poetry. So in other words, that has another dimension. I think even more influential than the rock. And
so sort of like a television star who could become president, for example.
Something like that, yes. Or prime minister.
well, I was kind of being specific there. But in essence, particularly during the second half of his life, the reason he was able to skate by is because he was a celebrity.
Yes, he was. His poetry was known everywhere. He was revered. And also, I think he created a kind of poetic personality. as a person, he's very different from others. Almost fearless, never hesitated to make enemies and friends. He had friends everywhere. So he was really a unique character.
You know, when we think of poetry today, mm-hmm. we think somebody is going to write something in a book and mm-hmm. then we're going to read it.
Yes.
But there are times you call his poetry songs.
Yes.
And he performed. What exactly did a poet do during the Tang Dynasty?
Poetry is always related to songs. In fact, in Chinese, it's called the shige. Basically, it's a combination of poetry and songs. His oral tradition is really the root of poetry. Even nowadays, most of the poets would recite the work or chant the work instead of read from the page.
So it's kind of like a rap star.
Yes. But then the other thing is the poetry, in his case, it came so easy because he was so talented, as if his poetry came without effort. But in fact, for many people, they would spend days, even months, just to finish one poem. So it didn't come easily. It's high art, in other words.
If he was, say, at a banquet and the emperor said, "I want you to perform," he would have favorite poems and he would say, "Can you perform this one?"
Yes, and they have a kind of repertoire, yes. But in his case, very often, most of the time, if you are a court poet, you are supposed to improvise. The composer at the moment, they call it occasional poems. In his case, he did that, a lot of that. He did have that kind of gift.
Would there be musical accompaniment behind him?
No, when the poem was created, no. But later, if it's a good piece, it will be set to music.
And then you'd have a composer somewhere else setting it to music.
Yes.
He would be reciting in a way that was chanting almost.
Yes. In his case, the poetry could come rapidly, sometimes endlessly.
And sometimes people would write it down and sometimes they wouldn't.
That's true. So that's why a lot of poems, in fact, were lost.
When he was raised, was being a poet considered a thing you could do? Or would it be more like, "I want to be an actor," and his parents are going, "Oh, no."
It's the same, you know, it's not a real profession. But there was a possibility if your poetry as a high art was good enough, it's very likely you can find an official position. You could find a patron and that can support you. You might have a good career. In fact, there were people before him and after him that became court officials. He became a court official because of that.
He spent his life wanting to be one and finally got there. But
he stayed there for 2 years and then he quit. But he always believed he belonged to the palace. In a way, it was justified. We know that after he died, he was vindicated by an invitation from the emperor, new emperor again. So there was kind of the inner struggle, the belief in himself as a super artist.
One thing I found interesting is how much he traveled. It almost seemed, at least in The Banished Immortal, it almost seemed as if, you know, taking a train from here and there, but he had to have either walked or gotten lifts on carts, right?
Yes, and also boats. He rode horses. He was restless. He just couldn't stop going on the road.
And he also needed to make money. Now, at the end, he was able to just, you know, people would pay him wherever he went.
Yes.
But early on, he needed money because he had a family.
Yes. Also, he was a big spender, extravagant. It seems to me, in his case, money came easily. But he had friends everywhere. Somehow, he always got support one way or another.
When you were working on the research, you know, you learned new things. Was there anything about his life that surprised you or offered a key to why he was a great poet?
You know, that part is already as if it was innate, because you do feel that his poetry is from another origin, it's not from himself. But I do feel I found new things about him. First, it was so basic, all the struggle it's kind of pathetic in a way, but also I think it's realistic. That is just to secure a regular income. That was the biggest fundamental need in his case. He never succeeded in that.
You know, when we think about medieval times, yes, here or there, we think about people robbing when going from place to place, but yes, it doesn't sound as if, it sounds safer than that.
Yes, at the time, yes, because the Tang Dynasty is really, everything was well regulated. The law, I think, is well kept too.
So people could walk safely from one end of China to the other.
Sure. Also, the rule was very strictly enforced. For instance, there was a curfew after 10 o'clock at night. Nobody was allowed to walk alone in a city, in a town.
Ever?
Ever.
So what happened if someone was really drunk in a tavern and it was 10 o'clock?
Then you'll be arrested. See, that's why at one point Li Bai ran into trouble because he returned home late after party. He startled a governor's horse, right? And
right,
he was basically, he was really humiliated by that.
You're listening to an interview with Ha Jin, whose book is a biography, The Banished Immortal, A Life of Li Bai, who's mm-hmm. Li Po. I'm Richard Walensky mm-hmm. on Book Waves. It's mentioned a few times, X-I-A-N.
Xian. Yes, that's a Chinese word. We don't have an English equivalent to that. That means kind of an immortal, a super being in between man and a deity. They're not a deity, but they are from human beings. But because of the cultivation of virtues, of morality, they become kind of like an immortal being in between deities and humans.
Well, Ha Jin, his second wife was a Taoist priest. She wound up in a monastery with her teacher, who
yes,
was also female. But that's the only time that women are mentioned in the context of Taoism in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Was it fairly common to have women Taoist priests?
Yeah, at the time, yes. Yes. Later, somehow, especially in modern China, even a regular male Taoist, very rarely you can encounter such a person, not to mention a female figure. But apparently in ancient times, this kind of woman Taoist were not uncommon.
When you were growing up, and this was during the period when Mao was still alive,
yes,
and running China, what did the government think of Li Po?
It was beyond politics. There was no argument. Nobody can say anything against him as a poet. The argument would be either he is greater than Du Fu or Du Fu greater than him. Only the two of them, which one is greater? That's the only argument. Because their work, their poems all have already become part of the language. There's no way for them to separate these poets from the Chinese language anymore. Really beyond anybody, any political figure. In fact, Mao Zedong was more fond of him than the other poet because he was romantic. He was kind of in spirit rebellious.
Do you remember when you first heard about him? Or was it always there so that when you became conscious, you already knew the names of Du Fu and Li Bai?
Before I graduated elementary school, I went to Chinese army, so we had not studied his work. But when I was in the army, my parents sent me some middle school textbooks. They bought the books from some older teachers, and the books had poems by Li Bai. So I think that was the first encounter. That means you are supposed to memorize these poems.
Are some of those poems that you memorized, are they in the book then?
Sure, yes. Yes. Remember that the short poem, kind of a reflection in the quiet light? Very short. He was penniless. He was homesick. So he wrote a poem, short poem about the moon and nostalgia. So it became a really signature poem of his.
Can you say a little of it in Chinese so we get an idea of...
Oh, sure. That's why in Chinese we all know this by heart. It's called 床头明月光,疑是地下霜,举头望明月,低头思故乡. This was when he was young, in his mid-20s. He was very, at the time, really lowest point of his life. But this poem really became a masterpiece. Even nowadays, when, you know, the UN, they celebrate the Poetry Day, they have 6 stamps, each showing the language, the original poem, and in its original language. This poem was printed as a representative of the Chinese poetry.
So when you memorized it, you also were able to write it out too?
Yes, yes. But maybe not in the exact complex, you know, script. In mainland China, we use simplified script. But we all know this poem by heart.
How many poems of Li Bai's would you have known by heart, did you?
I have forgotten a lot, but I would say at least 40 or 50.
Really?
Yes. In my case, not because, you know, there was, I didn't go to middle school. I just loved the poems. So I really memorized some. But many people, they would know hundreds even.
When you're writing your own poetry, is there any relationship where some of his ideas might seep in, or do you try to avoid it, or what?
No, I don't avoid, but I do. Some ideas do come up. In fact, got into my work. In fact, even the prose style in this book, because I've been translating his poems, I work with his material. I do feel that the prose is different, partly because of I am close to his poetry during the years.
How hard or easy is it to translate Li Bai's poetry?
It was not easy. So that explained why there had been no full-length biography of him, because then whose translation as a biographer you would like to use? Then there would be the issue for copyright. It could be very expensive. I didn't know this until later on, because I quoted a few lines from an American poet, then you have to pay hundreds of dollars for the few lines. But this, because I translated the poems by myself, that really make the process, the project more feasible. And for me, I think the huge advantage former scholars didn't have, that is the internet. In case of Li Bai, he had so many fans. All the fans, they would try their own, give their own spin on his poem. If you had a phrase or a line you are not sure of, check the poem. There would be a lot of interpretations. And his fans would rewrite the poems in current Chinese. I would have choices. I could see how this could be translated.
Ha Jin, how long are the longer poems?
The longest one, I think, is what I know, was almost 150 lines. But most of when we talk about longer poems by him, I would say around 50.
Around lines. 50 lines?
Yes.
So kind of like a very long song or something?
Yes, something like that, yes.
Yeah, they wouldn't be like The Wasteland.
No, no, they don't have that kind of structure, because it really is too close to the oral tradition, performance. Yes.
Now, he was not a formalist.
He was not constrained by any form. So in terms of forms, he was not as strong. And so there was always kind of impression there was a kind of a naturalness, formlessness in his poetry. But again, everything was really, it came from many, many years of cultivation or education.
So it's still within a framework.
Yes, that sense was very clear. But he would not follow the forms. He was not a master of most of the forms. But the amazing thing was, basically, up to his time, whatever form he wrote in, he produced one or two, even more masterpieces.
In Chinese, does any of it rhyme?
His poem, every poem is a rhyme. Every poem is a rhyme. But I couldn't do that.
Right.
In English, it would be very clunky, right? That's why I just did. That's a rational choice.
So can you give a couple lines that rhyme so we know what, so people can hear it in Chinese?
Sure, yes. Okay, there's one poem about wine. In original, he said, 来临美酒郁金香，欲挽常来琥珀光，但是主人能醉客，不知他何处是家乡. The Lanning wine gave off fragrance. As long as my host can make me drunk, I will have no idea where my hometown is. The original the lines was rhymed very strictly, very obvious. But in English, you can't do this. But the two lines really, the beauty of his poems, his best poems, the lines are still used. Nowadays, people, when they get together to drink, when I urge you to drink, I would say, as long as the host can make me drunk, I won't remember my hometown. Right. So that's why it becomes part of the language. But the English translation, I can only do the idea and the sentiment. I can't rhyme. It could be easily to become clumsy. So I decided to just write in straightforward current English.
Did he use puns?
Not many. Occasionally he used. Not many. Pun is a different category because then you would have to know the allusion. Right, the echo in the language. That would be even harder to translate. Impossible, yeah.
Now, metaphors he can do.
Yes, metaphors, you know, we can always, you know, reproduce the metaphor. That's not a problem.
Hajin, I'd like to change the subject since I have you here. We're living in kind of strange times here in America.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One of the things I noticed in Banished Immortal was the fact that he lived in peaceful times, and if you were born in the United States after World War II, there was no war here, and it's very peaceful times.
Sure.
We're entering a time now where we don't know if it's going to be peaceful in this country.
Mm-hmm.
What is your sense as somebody from China who lived through peaceful and not so peaceful times?
My sense is, in fact, the world, the order and the world is fragile. Very, very fragile. Sometimes just one person with the power can destroy a lot of things, a lot of damage, the havoc beyond our imagination. So that makes everyone vulnerable. I'm afraid the peace might not last
in this country.
Yes, in the world, in fact. Yeah.
When you were 11 years old, 12 years old, came the Cultural Revolution, and you were there. Did that affect you personally?
Sure, because school stopped. We didn't have anything to do at school. Basically, education stopped. So in my generation, there's a more than 10 years gap. Many of my people of my age, we didn't go to middle school and high school. So that was a huge loss. Your best years, basically, you wasted your best time.
And then you eventually went to school,
Yes, I'm lucky. Yes, I returned, I went to the Army. Then afterward, you know, 3 years working experience, then I went to college. That step really made me different from most of my generation because I did manage to have more education.
How often do you go back now?
I can't go back.
Really?
Yeah, ever since I came in 85, and I had never been back. I tried. In fact, both my parents passed when I was here, but the government wouldn't give me a visa, so I couldn't go back to see them.
That's terrible.
I know. That's why it's crazy, just crazy, yes.
You said before that you don't have the time to write another novel. Are you working on another novel?
I do, because my wife, fortunately, her illness now is much better, improved. So I can concentrate again.
What's the subject?
It's about an immigrant singer. He's from China. He tried to reinvent himself as a free artist, as an immigrant. 10 years, his struggle.
In America?
Yeah, America, yes.
You've been listening to an interview with Hajin, whose book is titled The Banished Immortal, A Life of Li Bai. It's a biography. I'm Richard Walensky on Book Waves.
Coming up next, it's Words and Pictures, where host S.W. Concer speaks to Raina Telgemeier, author and illustrator who has inspired many young readers with her graphic memoirs, Smile and Guts. KBOO is an independent, non-commercial community radio station powered by our volunteers and our members. By making a donation through GiveGuide on kboo.fm/give, you're eligible for more than $4,000 of free and discounted products from your favorite Portland brands while you support your favorite community radio station. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
They didn't decide how they can protect the animals or the environment or people more. Instead, they were like, well, how can we protect ourselves? And from that, they developed these protocols where prior to any large storm event, they're actually now locking all animals inside, boarding up the facilities and bolt locking them with multiple different devices so that nobody can get in and nobody can get out.
You were just listening to Elizabeth Jones, also known as Ethically Elizabeth. She is an animal rights activist, a rescuer, marine biologist, and a conservationist. You can catch this episode of Voices for the Animals on December 27th at 10 a.m. right here on KBOO, or anytime after the 27th on kboo.fm/voicesfortheanimals, also on Google Play and iTunes.
Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and we're coming to you from the Portland Book Festival. My guest today is an Eisner Award-winning author and artist whose work includes the graphic novels Drama and Ghosts, as well as the graphic memoirs Smile, Sisters, and Guts. She's also created stories for such collections as DC Comics' Bizarro World and Del Rey Manga's X-Men Misfits. Raina Telgemeier, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you'll indulge me. I want to start out by quoting Scott Stossel. He's a writer for the New York Times.